couple of days ago, I was scrolling through my newsfeed on Facebook. Always a danger. You just never know what you're going to see. And I read this just atrocious story of something that a young man had done to a World War II veteran. It was atrocious and devastating. And after I read this story and just felt sad with grief that something like this would happen to such a treasure, I then closed the article and I read what the person wrote who shared the article. He shared in graphic detail what he would do to this person if he were to ever run into him on the street. In fact, it was such graphic detail that I couldn't even share it with you this morning. And I just remember feeling grief then as well, knowing that this person is a Christian, someone that is involved in a fellowship. You know, and I think the reality is oftentimes our response to atrocious situations is not far off from what I read in my newsfeed. In fact, I see it often. Whenever we see something in our world that is just awful or unjust or terrible or atrocious or even unfair, our responses are often, well, I'll show them. And we respond back with force or violent words. Because they deserve this. We hear things like, they'll be sorry they ever met me. And we feel the need to fight back, to push, to overturn. And we see this down throughout history, don't we? We see humanity respond to moments of injustice, of atrocities, of terrible situations. Humanity responding back with insult or force or violence, take over coercion or seeking revenge. And this is not a new problem. We see this even shortly after the fall, when sin and evil entered into the world. The two sons of Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, Cain felt like he was fallen victim to an incredibly unfair situation. He stewed and stewed and stewed and ran off into the wilderness. And as he was alone in the wilderness, God spoke to him and said, Cain, don't even think about it. Don't seek revenge. There's murder in your heart, Cain. Cain, sin is knocking at your door. Cain, no. But we see Cain eventually stew, and sin takes over. And then the Bible's first murder. I think the reality is this isn't far off from the human condition that we see in the hearts of humanity even today. When someone offends us, for example, what do? We gossip about them, or we work to seek revenge. We chatter about them, and we say inhumane things about them. We dehumanize them. Or how about when someone wrongs us on the road, on the 210? Think, I'm going to cut them off right back, and I'll show them. Or drive past them, and we just lay on our horn for 30 seconds so that they know that we are just so mad. I've never done that. Or if someone disagrees with us, we work hard to protect our position, and eventually we resort to name-calling or violent words. Or even, what about when at home, when our children are acting out and they aren't behaving in the ways that we think we should, we react, we lose our minds, we get angry and we yell. Or what about when there are changes happening in our world, or in particular changes happening in the church? What do? We gossip about it. We participate in divisive chatter. We seek to control the situation and get in between. Or when we don't like someone, if someone makes us uncomfortable, we exclude them. And of course, we as Christians, we have our own hot button issues that we view as problematic. We want to fix it. And many of these situations, rightly so, they are egregious, they are sad, and some of them maybe not so much. But to all of them, we seek to control, to overpower, we get angry. These hot-button issues, such as the Christian left or the Christian right, we seek to protect our positions, or whether or not we should have prayer in school or culture wars, or whether or not we should be allowed to say Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas or, you know, Starbucks cups. They better say Merry Christmas on them, or important issues such as pluralism or seeking to protect life of the unborn. And we fight for our causes, sometimes lovingly, but oftentimes not. We need to show them we have something to protect. We can't just sit back and allow this to happen. This is wrong. This is causing America to decay. This is unjust. We get angry, we protest, we shout, we blame. And you see, oftentimes the argument with all of this is, if we don't do something, if we don't respond with force and anger, then we're just sitting on our hands. We're doing nothing. We can't just allow this to happen. We can't be doormats. And I contend this morning that the people of God in Christ, the bride of Christ, the very people of Pentecost who have been given the gift of the Holy Spirit, the people who have been given the gift of the God who has the biggest and grandest imagination, we've been given the gift of the imagination of the triune God. I contend that we often have the smallest imaginations of how to deal with conflict. Of how to deal with troublesome situations, of how to deal with injustice. The problem is our thinking tends to be so binary. It's either one extreme or the other. Get angry, shout, yell, make sure that change happens, or sit on our hands and do nothing. Gossip about it and solve the situation through gossip, or just, we can only think in extremes. Seek revenge or sit on our hands, shout, yell, get angry, or just let it happen. Push, shove, get our way, or just watch. This small imagination is not new. We see this even with the disciples. The disciples, they surely wanted a king. The people of Israel, they wanted a king. But not just any king. They wanted a king to come in and rule with an iron fist, to come in and overthrow Rome. They wanted a king to march into the city with his army. They wanted a king to march into the city as he rode his stallion with the chariots. But instead, they got a carpenter, a simple man. And instead, they didn't get the stallion or the chariots or the army. They got a king who rode in quietly on a donkey. And his royal coronation was that of a crown of thorns. And Jesus steps into this incredibly binary and polarized context. And what he does is over and over and over again proclaims a new path, something that was hardly ever on the table, an alternative way of thinking, not this or that, but a third way of thinking. And perhaps that's most apparent in today's beatitude. Open up your Bibles. We're going to be looking at a few different passages in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 5. Matthew's Gospel, chapter 5. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and he sat down. And his disciples came to him and he began to teach. And he said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." This is the word of the Lord. Over the last couple of weeks, we have been looking at Jesus' very upside-down vision of who he declares is blessed. And he continues to list the most unlikely of candidates, those who we would not consider blessed. And today, in this beatitude, he declares that the meek are blessed. Meek. Oftentimes, when we hear the word meek, what do we think of? Weak. Weak. When we use the word meek, we are not describing usually someone who is a leader or someone who is forceful or someone who is strong. Could you imagine a presidential candidate running for president saying, "Vote for me, I'm meek"? I've never seen an award ceremony where someone wins an award for the most meek in their class. Or could you imagine a campaign slogan, "Make America Meek Again"? Or none of us would be overly excited about this word, meek. Oftentimes when we think of the word meek, we think of someone who is mousy, someone who is a little bit more invisible, someone that stays in the corner and has not much to say. They might feel a certain way about things, but they're too afraid, they're too terrified to say it. We think of meek as the antithesis of powerful, the antithesis of strong or loud. But actually, that could not be further from the heart of this beatitude. And so let's talk for a moment about what Jesus is not saying. Jesus is not saying, "Hey, all of you guys who are meek, who are in really difficult situations, I know that you've been treated unfairly. I know that you've been treated unjustly. I know that it just seems like a cloud has been following you everywhere you go. I see you. This is problematic. But just hang in there. Don't worry, because in the end, it's going to work out. You're going to get the earth. You don't need to do anything. Just hang tight." That also is not what Jesus is saying. Meek is neither weak or mousy, and it's neither just sit back and do nothing. You see, this word meek is the same word in the Greek New Testament that is also used for gentle. It could be defined as gentleness. Another way to think about it is power that is in submission or under control. Someone who is meek could be incredibly powerful, could be incredibly influential, but they don't have to do it with force or manipulation or coercion or might. Someone that is meek chooses the way of gentleness. So as we've been mentioning over the last few weeks, Jesus continues to speak to a very particular group of people who are in the down and out, and he declares them as blessed. Blessed are the economically poor, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Blessed are those who mourn. And now in declaring that the meek are blessed, Jesus is declaring those who are in difficult situations and don't choose an extreme are blessed. In other words, these are those who are wrapped up in a situation that is completely out of their control. And they might be tempted to respond with force, with rage, with malice, with dissension, with bitterness, but instead they choose an alternative. And it's not sit on your hands and do nothing. But it's also not strong-arming or coercion. Scott McKnight says, they lovingly trust God and hope in God's timing and God's justice. They willingly wait on God for justice and kingdom and for the devotion that runs so deep. They mourn over the condition of Israel and the causes of that condition. So not only are they blessed, but Jesus then makes a pretty profound statement. He says, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Another way to think about this is, for they will inherit the land. Now think for a moment how we get land. Think through history. How do countries acquire land? They fight for it. They use power. They use force. They use weapons and powering over. But Jesus radically flips this upside down. He says, hey, if you are my kingdom people, if you declare your allegiance to me above all else, Jesus is calling us then to an alternative, not to look at the brokenness and injustices of this world, sit on our hands and do nothing and just say, is that terrible? We should just pray for them at a distance. And Jesus is also saying, don't fight back. Don't respond with insult to insults. Jesus is declaring that we will inherit the earth not with worldly tactics, but through an alternative, through a third way. You see, we have to think about the Beatitudes within the context of the entire Sermon on the Mount. Because this is so hard for us. We want to think in binaries. We want to think in a polarized way. We want to think it's either one extreme or the other. And we don't know how to respond to atrocious situations. We don't know how to respond to difficult situations and conflict in our world. We think that we either have to fight back or we have to just sit back and do nothing. But Jesus steps into this context and he says it's neither. I've got a better way, an alternative way. I've got a third way. And so Jesus is speaking specifically to those who might be economically poor and stuck in a system that is just completely unfair with no way out. He's speaking specifically to those who are oppressed by the hand of violence, or those who are insulted over and over again, those who have been rejected, forsaken, and abandoned. He's speaking to those today who have been demoted in their job unfairly, the ones who are continued to be overlooked, forgotten about, and invisible. These are the ones who have been nothing but kind and good, but they are shoved aside or stabbed in the back or treated unfairly or hurt and bruised. These are the ones who have so much to bring to the table, so many gifts, so many talents, so much to the offer but to the table, but they are continuously excluded. These are the ones who walk into a room and feel invisible and constantly overlooked. These are the ones who give, 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 but all they ever receive is someone who takes, takes, takes from them. These are the ones who it just seems like down throughout their entire life, a dark cloud just surrounds them. And yet, in these situations, they remain meek. Meek. Weak? No. Not weak. Meek. Mousy? No. Not mousy either. A doormat then? No, not a doormat either. An enabler? You must mean an enabler then. They're just enabling this situation to happen. No, not that either. Invisible? No, not invisible either. Meek. Meek. Sitting on the sidelines and doing nothing? No, not that either. Meek. Watch the world go to hell in a handbasket? No, not that either. Meek. Turn a blind eye and just ignore it? No, not that either. Meek. You see, Jesus over and over and over steps into a context, into a world where the only imagination is either sit on our hands and do nothing and take no position, or we respond back with force and violence. And Jesus steps into that and begins to pave, yes, a very narrow path. Yes, a path that not many choose to take. Yes, a path that he says, this gate is very narrow. Not many are going to enter it. Most are going to choose the polarized ways. Most are going to choose the extremes. Most are going to choose the wide gates. And he steps into this and begins to proclaim a different way, a third way, a new way. If you're still not sure what I'm talking about, let's take a look at Matthew chapter 5, verse 21. Jesus says, You've heard that it was said to people long ago, you shall not murder. Anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you, anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court, and anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger in the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and they remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to them. Then come and offer your gift. He's paving a different path, a different way of thinking. If someone offends you, neither get angry and seek revenge, and neither just sit back and do nothing. Again, verse 38, Jesus says, you've heard that it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them, the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you, take your shirt and hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them too. And again, verse 43, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? Whoa, Jesus. But what about when someone really hurts me, Lord? Then do I have to pray for them? Then do I have to love them? Can't I just respond back to them with an insult? Can't I just show them my rage and anger? And Jesus steps in and begins plowing a different path, a narrow path, a difficult path, and he begins to proclaim a different way. And he says, no, actually, I want you to love those who hurt you and wound you differently. This love may look different for everyone, but I want you to step into God's kingdom imagination and imagine what that could be. Not just love them, but pray for them. Not just walk 1 mile with them, but walk 2 miles. You see, Jesus didn't just teach this over and over, but he actually embodies it over and over. In fact, we could have a lot of incredible conversation about how Jesus fulfills the promise of a meek king. And we see them especially embody this all the way to the bitter end, if you will. Jesus is being taken by the authorities as he's journeying to the cross. And Peter, he sees this injustice. His Lord, he's been walking with Jesus all this time. They can't take him. Don't they know that he is a king? So Peter seeks to stop this situation with force, of course. And he takes out his sword and he approaches the servant of one of the authorities and he cuts off his ear. Jesus doesn't turn to Peter and say, Peter, thank you for managing this for me. I didn't know what I was going to do. But instead, Jesus stops the situation. He says, no, more of this. And he stoops down. He picks up the ear. And he puts his hand on the ear of the man who was insulting him, who was dragging him away. And he heals it. What Jesus does is he not only teaches us, but he shows us, he gives a kingdom imagination of how to move into injustices, of how to move into incredibly broken situations and have a bigger imagination for what it looks like to participate in healing and reconciliation and restoration and redemption in this world. He doesn't say do nothing, but instead he shows us a better way, the way of love, the way of gentleness, the way of healing, the way of peacemaking, the way of reconciliation, the way of restoration. I don't know about you, but those words that I just said, that's not do nothing. But it requires action. It requires us to enter into situations, sometimes incredibly vulnerably. It requires us oftentimes to put ourselves out there. It requires us to do the hard thing and pray for those that hurt us. But our problem is we just don't have much of an imagination for anything else. The way we see it is deal with it by taking matters into our own hands or doing nothing at all. Perhaps right now you're in a situation where you're not happy. Someone's frustrating you at work. You have a boss that just seems impossible to work for. You find yourself on the 210 every day and you just want to be that person that just holds your horn down. God's working on me on that one. Or perhaps you've been wronged by a family friend or a neighbor or stuck in a system of injustice. Whatever it might be, Jesus offers a radical alternative. And that is the way of meekness, gentleness, and love. And I have to tell you, God is dealing with me on this one. There have been people in my life that I've been hurt by. There have been situations that have hurt me. And as I think back to how I often deal with them and how I often respond to them, I go into hiding. I run. It's like the garage door of my heart just shuts. And Jesus says, there's a better way. There's a bigger vision. There's a bigger imagination. It's the way of meekness. Not sitting back and doing nothing, but actually participating in the kingdom work of this world by the way of love, gentleness, mercy, self-control, restoration, healing, and reconciliation. But oh, we just want to mimic the world around us. There's a story, a fable perhaps, of someone who found an egg, didn't know what to do with the egg, so he brought it to the local chicken coop and set it in there. The egg hatched, and it turned out that it wasn't a chicken, but it was an eagle. But as the eagle grew, the eagle was surrounded by chickens, and so it learned how to peck away at the grass and eat little seeds. And one day, the eagle and the chickens were there pecking away at grasses and balking and making the noises that they do, and looked up, and there was just an eagle soaring across the sky. And the eagle asked one of the chickens and said, "What's that?" And the chicken said, "That's an eagle, king of the birds. But never mind, because you're just a chicken." And so the eagle continued on pecking and balking and living his life in the chicken coop. Seems to me that God has created us to soar above. It seems to me that God has called us to a bigger and more grand and beautiful imagination. But we're surrounded by a world that deals with conflict in incredibly binary ways. So we mimic them instead of mimicking the way of Jesus. We settle for an anemic and a small imagination. But the imagination in Scripture is just so much bigger. Love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. deal with conflict and gentleness, finding alternative paths and third ways. But we just go on, never mind that. We'll just continue on responding like everyone else.